Hello, welcome to Plaid Chat Overwatch episode 105. Jonathan isn't here because he's in Hawaii. We have to make this a short episode because of rehearsal schedules for Hawaii. Who is that? Bren's giving me his player of the week right now, and I don't know who that is.
Okay, I can already tell it's something.
Okay, this is already idiotic. Yeah.
This guy had the nerve to go try and almost tell Joe Rogan that he's a podcaster. He hasn't been on a podcast in months.
True, actually. Very true.
He's physically there while we're recording it, and he's still not on it.
Tell the story, because people at home...
Okay, so we had just come off finishing our co-stream for Valorant Masters, so we're hanging out. Harsha's there. He's in Austin. Harsha, right? Of the Houston Outlaws. Thanks, Bryn. Thank you for giving Josh some food.
I kind of know Harsha.
Yeah. And we're there.
He builds keyboards now.
He does. He's more of a keyboard content creator now. So it's myself, Sideshow, aka Josh, Bryn, Wyatt, Rivers, and Harsha hanging out at Austin Bar. And what happened? At this point, I have had severe alcohol poisoning from being there all week. Bryn's is like, we have to keep going out all the time. I'm like, I can't do anymore. And then who walks in but Joe Rogan? He's wearing a hat, of course, to seem inconspicuous, and followed by like a huge mountain looking dude. And so we all turned to ourselves and we said, wouldn't it be funny if one of us walked up to him and said, I'm a podcaster too?
He just came alone. He was there alone.
No, he had people with him. But the problem is that like I was willing to do it, but then his security detail eyed me out really early because I was drinking a ton of water and there's a water station next to his table. So I was getting up like every like 5 minutes to get water because there's small
cups. Not creepy at all. You're just going to get water.
I'm right next to him. The water station was right next to his table too. So I'm getting up and I'm like clearly looked at Joe Rogan. I was like, oh, that's Joe Rogan. And like getting up, getting stuff. And the security guard's just like looking at me the whole time, waiting for me to make a move. And
he would have snapped Connor like a twig.
Yeah, he was clearly a man built for functional purpose. And like also some woman got stopped by the security detail too. Like they were like, no, you can't talk to Joe. So I'm like, they would have crunched me.
Yeah, we're bigger than him anyway.
Right. He would have been like, oh, you guys are a Plaid Chat, come over.
Exactly. Yeah, and we would have declined because we're bigger than him. There's even bigger news than that, though. There's even bigger news than Joe Rogan accidentally sitting 2 meters away from us, and that is that Overwatch 2 is going to be playtested by the pros in Hawaii. I believe it's like halfway through the grand final or something. The pros that have already been eliminated from the playoffs at that point are going to get pulled together into pug teams, I guess.
What Josh was referring to as halfway through the grand finals, that would be halftime. So at halftime,
that's the same thing.
It's called halftime. Who calls it halftway?
Actually,
through the
it's
match?
Called game half-time. Break if you want to use the proper term that Overwatch uses.
Oh, I mean that's just I mean game break. Sure, whatever the hell you want to call it, it's the halftime of the day. Yeah, the pros are going to be able to play a show match. It's going to be pretty sick. I think it's awesome to be able to have the pros get hands on this early, provide feedback. I think it's an awesome opportunity.
Yeah, I'm excited for it because it really requires the pros to get some experience on it for us to know what the game would even look like. How does it differ? What if you use the same approach that you do when you play a 4,500 rank game? Because that's essentially what this is, right? It's like some super high SR rank game with a bunch of pros. If you approach it from the Overwatch 1 mentality, what happens? What's different? What works? What doesn't work? How does the game actually shift when you are an experienced player that knows how the game should be played, but you're playing a new version of the game? I think that's really cool. I'm really excited not just to watch, but also to hear the pros' commentary afterwards.
And it'd also be interesting to get their feedback and interpretation on, a lot of like, maybe Zarya is not possible as a solo tank, but when they go in and realize there's one less tank on each team and she has two bubble cooldowns, maybe they're like, oh man, she actually can be a solo tank. Or like you play Reinhardt and maybe he actually plays like, because functionally, like some of these characters that are getting, whether it's like, a rework or new abilities and stuff, essentially the reworks are just like almost like new heroes, right? In the sense that like they're getting a lot of things differently with their kit that combined with all the other things going on in the game makes them like basically new heroes in a way. So it'll be interesting to get their point on that.
Avash, question for you. coming out of this, there's always the React Andes in the pros that are like, they jump out the window and they're like, oh, this is broken. X is broken. What is going to be the most broken thing? If you were to put your finger on one thing to say the pros are going to mold about this when they play it for the first time, what is it?
We don't even know what's going to... The things that were promised as well is we're going to see Sombra and Bastion reworks, you know?
Okay.
I think just latching onto that concept, the concept of Sombra is really interesting in how, and like if it's going to be broken or not, right? Because Sombra is very, very strong currently. But, you know, there's a lot of options to mitigate her. But how does that work when you have less tanks to remove her space, right? If you only have one tank, how are you chasing down translocators? How are you removing her from the flank to stop her from getting manual hacks, right? Because manual hacks can be really, really powerful in Overwatch 2 if you're, let's say, you want to have a survival backline and you just hack the Baptiste every time, but there's no way to ever zone the Sombra, right? Because you have less players on the field. It's a lot harder to keep track of her.
I'd say somebody ever consider making Sombra support.
That would be pretty interesting. So I think looking at Sombra and then seeing as the kind of the yardstick of like, where does DPS, how are they changing DPS to fit into Overwatch 2, right? Because you can't have DPS also be the same, otherwise they're going to be really, really powerful. There's a lot of adjustments that has to be made.
Yeah, I would assume that you need to this is like a good point where I know I kind of laughed at support, but you need to take her in one or two ways, right? You know, in a more supporty play style, right? Where like hacks and setting things up for teammates or reducing some of that and make her an actual damage dealer. Because right now, I think one of the things that Sombra, probably the most of any hero, I would say, is in terms of like variance and effectiveness between skill levels. Like at the probably lower to even like middle skill tier, she's just like trash win rate because you have to play so much around team and everything like that. But in the high level, she's like insane, right? With a coordinated team and you know how to use her effectively, where they probably need to try and push her in a direction that's more in line with like a different variation of Tracer style damage dealer, like a flanker with a gun that can, you know, add it. Maybe it's not kind of self-sustained. Maybe it's some kind of like, whether it's like hacking or some other kind of thing that they work into that and make her more in that vein. Because I agree with you. I think like, if hack is like the same where it lasts that long on one tank, like that's going to be disastrous for that player.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting idea, or not just ideas, but tests that Jeff Goodman was saying in that response that we just pulled up, where they had tried out her doing 50% extra damage from behind, which seems wild in a game like Overwatch, where you can just turn around and move so quickly. I don't know how you would get value out of that. And then also, the hacks were wall hacks rather than silences originally. And you could EMP, and then I guess everyone that you caught with the EMP would be wall hacked, which is incredibly weak, but the actual hack element of it is pretty strong. Like getting manual hacks and silencing people is crazy, absolutely crazy strong, but it's still powerful and yet toned down if you could hack someone and they were just visible through walls. That's still really powerful. Like you can track people's movement, their positioning, pre-fire them as they're coming around corners. Like all of that is still really interesting. I don't know. There's a lot of different ways they could go. I want a hot take from both of you. How is Bastion reworked?
I mean, my take is that Bastion, I would assume that essentially his entire core design is abandoned of like the turret form is so drastically changed that it's like almost not even equivalent because you simply can't have turret Bastion with one less tank anymore. You just can't do it. You know, like it just won't work. He's already weak now with two tanks.
Okay.
So with one less tank on the field, like either the turret would have to be crazy, like I don't even understand exactly how the mitigation would work, or it would essentially have to be something where he just becomes way more recon focused and like, or maybe has more forms. Maybe Bastion gets like forms.
What if he's like a fucking transformer? What if he's a transformer and he has like fucking, like he has like a speed form where maybe he can't shoot, but he could like dart around and get to positions and set up. Like, I don't know.
I mean, those forms are cool. And that's where I could see like where the Bastion also, because it kind of wastes the character as well if he can't do transformations. Because like, what's the point? He's just a robot. Yeah, yeah. But the whole point of Bastion is that he can transform. So to me, envisioning they were just focused more and he has more different types of forms to do. But it's kind of interesting to think about how would that even work, right? So my hot take is like, I hope Bastion is going to have like 3+ forms to take
God, now you've got me thinking. I mean, he could have a zooming form where he's not allowed to shoot, but he just repositions. He could have an attack helicopter form where he gets to fly, but he's really slow in the air and he can shoot down from above. That would be amazing. And then you've got his recon form. God, these are great ideas. We'll take these to the developers quickly before they lock it in.
I
could be a contractor. Just
in seriousness, I just want to see, like, with Sombra and Bastion, just like a clear direction of where they fit in the lineup of damage dealers. Because I think when you look across the damage dealers, those two specifically are like, where do they fit? Like, Sombra only fits in when she's giga strong, and otherwise she's like never played. And then Bastions never fit in. So to fit them into some type of archetypes that could be playable, I think would be good. Because I mean, you look at the rest of the roster of heroes, everybody else is pretty playable.
I think that's a pretty fair way of looking at it. I mean, we're headed into our most open meta for a grand finals ever by the look of things. I mean, touch wood, we have no idea exactly what's going to be played, but it seems like an open meta anyway. I wanted to highlight something that was brought up on the competitive Overwatch subreddit, which was the MVP fan vote results. So someone built a website that tracked fan voting on the OverwatchLeague.com website. So this was a separate website that hooked in, I guess, to like clicks or the API or I don't know how technology works.
But somewhere
they were able to compile different portions of the pie and see who had voted for who. And so if you take a look at this, if we zoom on in, the blue bar is WeChat, which is a Chinese social... is it social media, really? It's like a mix of social and Reddit.
It's almost like WeChat, but with social media forums.
Okay.
WeChat is a Chinese multi-purpose instant messaging, social media, and mobile payment app developed by Tencent.
Okay.
First released in 2011.
I'm pretty sure.
It's become the world's largest standalone mobile app in 2018.
Yeah.
Over 1 billion monthly active users.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I'm pretty sure it has like a WhatsApp functionality and also like social media, like Reddit functionality. Yeah.
It sounds like it does fucking everything.
Yeah.
Instant messaging, social media. You can pay things through it. I mean,
yeah, excellent. That's a good thing to give one company so much control over your life. So there's WeChat, then there's the Overwatch League website China, which is either the Chinese votes or the Chinese version of the website. Not exactly sure which, but that's the way that they've broken this down. So what I liked from this is not only the fact that you can see a huge amount of people voting for Leave from China, and also Lip as well, like a ton of people on WeChat also voting for Lip, but also when people are talking about viewership for Overwatch League and thinking about YouTube and then the Chinese viewership stuff as well that's been run through Bilibili or other stuff in the past as well, people don't realize how big the Chinese audience is and the Chinese engagement is as well. And I feel like a lot of it is just brushed away as like, oh, China fakes its numbers. There's probably 3 people watching. And, you know, there's a lot of hand-waving that goes along as people want to just kind of poo-poo it all. But... just again, another indication that there's a huge amount of people who are fans of Overwatch from China.
Even if the number was halved, it would still be a fuck ton of people.
Yeah, I mean, even if the number was halved, it's still more people interacting with this than there is from everywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
Which is just insanity.
What is the difference between Overwatch League China and Overwatch League website that's overseas?
I'd assume there are multiple different websites. I'd assume though there's definitely content that's made for the Chinese and APAC audience that is different than the content that's made for US. Yeah. Like they have different like side videos and stuff. There's one that I saw that was hilarious with cats that.
So is overseas not
translated?
Yeah, overseas is not China. Overseas is like from somewhere outside of China. It was a Chinese person that made this, Avast. So they say overseas, they mean foreign to China.
Okay, this makes sense. So it's everywhere else other than China.
Does Leave lead in terms of fan vote in everywhere?
I believe so. Yes, that's what this graphic indicates, by a significant margin as well.
My man's had a come up.
if this is accurate, then it's Leave, Fearless, and then Shu is actually in third place when you look at the overseas.
Not get Hanbin's gameplay over there? He's got how many votes?
Yeah, well,
to be fair, I mean, he's an off tank. He's an off tank.
I'm voting for Hanbin, bro. You deserve it, dog.
Tanks always.
Your vote's already been locked in, mate. You can't alter it at this point.
Been locked in for weeks. Yeah,
yeah, it has been. I mean, I'm glad that they also voted for Lip as well from Shanghai Dragons because he was a huge pick. But I just thought this was a really interesting graph as well because it's very easy to have a very Western-centric or Anglophone-centric view whenever we're thinking about fan perceptions or the amount of people involved in something, or you just look at the YouTube viewership and you don't look at everything else. But Overwatch has been designed as a very global esport, and one of the areas that they've caught is China by a long shot. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Yeah. What the other thing that I noticed, though, when I was looking through this and also another couple of pieces from that had been posted to the subreddit, too, were that nobody really gives credit to Dallas Fuel in Asia. Like, they're not a team that people are looking at as being, like, one of the top dogs. I feel like the Western audience, the Reddit audience, really caught on to, like, that Western NA narrative early. And as Chengdu, as Shanghai have become the better teams in the second half of the year, and of course the Gladiators as well, but as those teams have kind of taken over, that's where all of the Asian fans have latched onto, which is a pretty interesting swap in points of view.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. It's you thought maybe Fearless would get some love as he played for Shanghai for an extended period of time, but definitely not.
What I expect, right? DPS always gets the most vote every time. That always happens, no matter what. DPS always gets the most votes. And
what Avast? What about Tank Synergy, though?
Tank
Synergy? If everybody votes for DPS, wants to play DPS.
Yeah.
What about Tank Synergy, though?
I mean, the reality is that it's just that's the truth, you know? I mean, do I think that they, you know, they don't have as high of IQ as other tank and support enjoyers? Perhaps, you know, like myself. But, right, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah. Big. You're a big tank player, right, Avast? You're a big tank.
I do like tanks. Actually, it's really? my second most played role outside of supports was the main tank.
Because you know that when we were trying to find opponents for the Brittlemaker, we were like, "Why don't you play Avast?" And he was like, "No. He's no competition for me."
Well, first of all, that's not even true. But also on top of that, it's whatever.
Okay. The next topic I wanted to go to, though, was Pelican.
Is that Kurt howling?
Yeah, Pelican. Not Pelican. Kurt is just giggling in the other room. I want to talk about Pelican because we had a lot of discussions last week when we were doing the bracket predictions, saying we didn't even know what was going to happen with Pelican. We didn't know whether he'd be allowed to play because he's playing from outside. He can't travel via airplane because of his collapsed lung that got fixed up recently. He went to hospital for that. That has been solved, but you still aren't recommended to fly afterwards because of the variations in pressure, I would assume. So Brad, the head coach of the Atlanta Reign, spoke to Liz Richardson of Dota Esports and said Pelican will be allowed to play in the playoffs. He will also be moving to West Coast, I believe playing out of the FaZe headquarters in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's accurate.
Because Atlanta is like partnered with FaZe, I guess, for the Call of Duty CDL. Yep. So he's going to be able to play. The other thing in this article as well is that when there are West Coast games, so when Atlanta plays against, for example, Washington or Dallas in the lower bracket, if they got there, they would be playing on West Coast servers. They wouldn't be playing on Tokyo. So that makes a huge difference for somebody like Pelican who can't travel to Hawaii. And that should make their games, especially against North American teams, way more competitive, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is something that I think, like, after the last tournament, obviously, they're trying to figure out with Atlanta what was going on with Pelican. We wanted to accommodate them as much as possible, right? So for them to be able to play, those games, or try to play those games, depending on the situation, against the NA teams, really, on the West Coast server, I think that's great for them.
Yeah.
Pelican being there is absolutely huge for Atlanta Reign, too. Like, actually having him there, because I do think Edison, actually, when he stepped in, was pretty solid, too, but it's hard to underestimate the value Pelican has had for the rain this year. And him being on a relatively equal ping footing is gigantic for their chances. And I imagine a gigantic morale booster for them just to be able to play with Pelican, because I'm sure the rain players, you know, do they have a, you know, do they sort of have a tendency to bitch and moan? Yes. But also at the same time, like, they do have very legitimate complaints at times, I think. And there are definitely times where I feel like they've been, feel like they've been shafted, even if they, it's not necessarily totally correct, because sometimes they just, but they definitely have been a very unfortunate circumstance, have been having those at times. So Pelican being there, I think it's going to improve morale
for the team. can you speak more about what Seffy's talking about in this paragraph in the middle of the screen? Between moving games for Pelican, which makes sense, we already discussed that, and then making the East Region teams travel to a venue.
Oh, yeah.
Has that been announced already? I'm unaware of that.
I was actually looking to see if there was a spot. We talked about that, but Brad mentions it here, where the teams in China, that would be Shanghai and Chengdu, they'll be going to play from a central location in Shanghai. And then I believe Philadelphia, they're going somewhere in Korea to play.
Right.
And then to try and even it out as much as possible, we blocked out, obviously, with the travel, right? That kind of takes a day where, you know, maybe the NA teams are a little bit worried that the APAC teams be able to scrim during that, right? So to have the travel days be the same, content shoot dates be the same across all three locations, trying to limit or really you know, keep the practice time between these teams for the last I don't know, probably 3 to 4 days right before everybody, you know, was once everybody started travel, equal amongst the teams. So it wasn't like while you know, Atlanta was flying to Hawaii, Shanghai was home scrimming, right? They had to, you know, move and do content as well during that time to be blocked out.
I see. Does that mean they're going to be playing from like some kind of stage or whatever when they're in these venues? Or is it just some area that's very similar to like Hawaii where they're in rooms together?
I'm going to say it's more of like a studio look. I haven't seen it, to be quite honest, but I believe it's some kind of like studio location, remote location. I don't think it's anything where like there's like massive stage or like fans or anything.
Right. Oh, that's cool, though. Yeah. That's, I mean, again, that seems like from this article as well, from what Brad is talking to Liz about, it seems like they are happy with it. I mean, what Brad is saying is that they feel like the playing field is very fair. They're about as balanced as you can get in the current environment. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it was one of the feedback things that the teams kind of gave us, right? Is that, hey, you know, we have to fly now and do content, and they are just at home scrimming or whatnot, right? And every day for these teams is a, you know, an opportunity to get better and learn and do more. So we did as much as we can, obviously, with dealing with the relocations to even that up as much as possible.
That makes sense. Did you all see the potential bait on Twitter, if we're talking about people and teams traveling, from Poco? Because I don't know what to think about this, and I want your opinions on it, because I can't believe even if he could travel to Korea or North America in order to either be with his team or play on servers with low ping, I can't believe they would even field him in the first place. And he's posted a tweet, which is, he said, what if, and then it's a picture of his backpack at an airport. I mean, what are we supposed to read into this?
All right, let me see something.
What are you going to see, Sherlock?
No, never mind. I was like, has Poco streamed recently and has the background been different? Because like you could have tweeted this picture now, but maybe you traveled like a week ago, two weeks ago, right? And you've just kind of kept it on the sneak, you know? But
yeah,
he's been streaming.
The Carpe screenshot is to be believed, if he hasn't edited the dates, Carpe asked him if he's showing up on like the 18th of September,
which is two days ago.
Yeah. Which would be hard to, which the 2 weeks ago narrative wouldn't make any sense. But if Carpe is somehow big brain enough to have changed the dates on these Discord DMs,
or just asked him when he had already arrived, you know, they just plot.
Oh, that's true. It could just be a separate conversation. Yeah, it could be just a meme.
Yeah.
But I mean, the thing is, that would still require a very some obvious like obfuscation, right? In which case,
the
like,
line is Carpe responding to something Pogo said with a whoa. So maybe that's I'm good to come.
It could be some obvious obfuscation there. So I mean, I don't know. I think it's really interesting, but it would have to be an incredible. I mean, it would just be. It's wild to think about playing him if he were going to play if he hasn't had any time all year. You know,
right? That's the other thing. He's only played in EU contenders. It feels, even though I do think Poco is better than Hotbur, Poco without any practice in a real team environment, like an hour
level. What if he had 2 full weeks? What if he had 2 full weeks?
If he had 2 full weeks, then maybe. I mean, that would require 2 full weeks would be like, you would have to have the utmost confidence, and it's still a ridiculously risky decision to spend like, let's say like we spend 2 weeks practicing with Poco, and then we don't like our results in the 2 weeks. It's like, well, I'm gonna come back, Hoppa. And he has to play for 2 weeks. You know, but also then you haven't been practicing for Hoppa for 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So
yeah.
It's a very, very risky decision to where you have to let's say even if they had the 2 weeks, the coaches have to have the utmost faith in Poco to come back. And it would be an incredible storyline.
Poco's also such a troll, though. He is such a trolly person. It smells like bait to me.
It does seem like
an old picture for all we know.
It could have been from years ago. That might be a picture we dug up from 2015.
Yeah, I think it could be.
Bait or not bait? I want the answer. Bait or not bait from both of you.
I'm going to say it's not bait, but he doesn't play. Maybe he's just physically, maybe he's going to help like scout or coach or something, but maybe they finally got his visa and were like, we don't want you to not see anybody all year long. So they just flew him out. I don't know.
Yeah, that was actually what I was going to say. I was going to say that because I feel like Fusion overall, like a lot of other teams with the situation that Fusion were in, would just be like, okay, goodbye, European players. You can't play, so we're just going to drop you, you know? Yeah. But Fusion were like, no, we're going to stick it out. We're going to tough up. We're going to bring out people slowly. And even though like Poco has really been like the last that I like, can't really get there at all. There's a very strong possibility
of,
where
when
like,
you think of Philadelphia, you think of Carpe and Poco, right? They've been there since day one, right?
Yeah, and then they've been not there since day one for this season as well. I mean, Carpe has, but not Poco, right? So I do think there's like, logistically, like, I don't think no one could have realistically blamed, well, you could have because they made the choice to like go play in APAC, but you still could have been like, if they had ended up dropping Poco this year, because
how many players have played for the same team for every year?
I think there's only like less than
Carpe,
three or four.
Poco,
Super.
Yeah, Super's been playing since 2018. Yeah.
So I don't think there's like almost none.
Jonah
left.
Has been playing since from New York.
Yeah, there's like
I think there must be under 10 players in the league though.
I'd say it's probably like under 6, right?
Probably.
I mean, I think this is a perfect thing to put in the comments. If you're listening to this right now, go and do the research for us. That is such an interesting question. If you can think of any players that have been on the same team since 2018 until right now, post them in the comments. Don't say the same ones that we've just said, you morons, but if you can think new ones.
Yeah, and I mean,
post it.
Yeah, I mean, you have the expansion teams as well. Like Gushue has always been on.
Spark haven't really changed the roster too much, honestly.
But I would say 3 years is like a larger accomplishment.
Only people that have been there since 2018. Let's put it like that.
Yeah.
Talking about roster changes and all of that kind of stuff as well. The Overwatch League also announced the 2022 key dates for roster construction and that kind of stuff. And a lot of what we've been discussing about the 2022 season, the rumors it was going to be like a 10-month off season, and then the fact that it was, you know, announced to be aiming to begin in April 2022. Sorry, a lot of people were saying, "Well, what are teams going to do in the meantime? It's a 6-month off season again. That's incredibly long. Are people just going to drop their entire teams and then try and pick people up? It's Overwatch 2. Do you even want your current roster?" Etc. etc. If you look at these key dates, you have to have 5 players locked in by January 3rd. That is really quite soon, because that's then 4 months that you have them under contract, just scrimming Overwatch 2. You don't have events, at least as far as we're aware, because the season is planned to begin in April. So that's 4 months of guaranteed roster stability, at least to some degree, for these teams, which I think is a good thing when you consider the offseason is 6 months.
Well,
getting that roster date earlier as opposed to later does help the players a little bit.
This aligns with a lot of the roster rules from last season, where, you know, it's kind of the same cadence, right, with starting up in April. So as far as I'm aware, I don't think much has changed.
The biggest change by far and the greatest change of this is that offer contract extensions, like if they do plus one deals, like those have to be done at the same time that everyone else becomes free agents. So essentially all contract, because before there was people that were under extensions. So like if you had a plus one, like a one plus one, teams in the previous seasons, they could choose not to extend you after the free agent date. So you could be a free agent much later than other free agents, which actually hardcore boned some players.
Because everybody else would have a spot so that you...
Exactly. Just, so yeah, you this is actually a much more consistent rule set with free agents now heading into this offseason, which is a great change, like a way better change, because it forces teams to just like, we are extending your contract or not. And if you're not, that means they immediately enter the free agent pool along with everyone else, which is way better.
They also increased the minimum salary to $50,700 instead of $50,000.
I did see that.
You know, just accounting for inflation. Just in counting
those
for
Valiant
inflation.
Players going to be eating good next year. They're going to be eating good.
Oh, that's so sad, Avast. That's so sad. But yes, so yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see this offseason.
And
it's the most weird offseason we've ever had, though, because how the fuck do you even know who to pick up for Overwatch 2?
And what, the minimum amount of players, I think, went from seven to six, right?
Yeah, less roster, which makes sense. I mean, you're removing one spot on a team. So
I wonder how many players teams will have. I assume you would still bring in... Do you just go with, like, two tanks, two DPS, and three supports? Like,
that seems like a heinous amount. Three supports?
Do you think you need somebody who can play the double flex support stuff? And
I think tank is the role that's going to change the most. I think you want more tanks, if anything.
You said you would have more than two tanks, you think?
I think you might even want three if you consider that...
Really?
Well, here's how I would think about this. You don't know who's going to be good at tank. You can be pretty confident people are going to be good at support and DPS if they've been good at that before. But for anyone that was a main tank, are you going to be confident they can play everything? If everyone was an off tank, are you going to be confident they can play the main tank style? I don't think I would be confident as a GM with only two players to cover, what is it, nine here? How many tanks are there in the game right now? Plus the extras they're probably going to add for Overwatch 2. We might be looking at 9, 10 tanks. I don't really know.
Hog, Sigma, D.Va, Winston, right?
I've lost track. I don't know. But even if we theoretically just said there were nine, right? Having three tanks per person when you're going into such a very different game.
There's eight right now.
Yeah, I feel like it would be reasonable to say 9, 10 once we actually get to Overwatch 2 being released. Maybe not on the beta version that they're going to be playing in April. I don't know whether they're going to have all of the new heroes at that point in time.
If some of them go over, playing Zarya as an off tank may not transition to playing Zarya as a main tank with the different like bubbles, that it may be a different type of play style. Also, you could say the same thing for Reinhardt, right? Where maybe it's a more aggressive style. Like,
I also don't think if I'm a GM, I'm not going to sign three tanks at the beginning of the year because they might all three be duds. But I might sign two at the beginning of the year and then maybe drop one halfway through and pick up somebody else. So I have three over the course of the whole season. But
I think DPS, you'd be safe with two or three as well. Maybe just keep it the same and like have like a 9-player roster, three at each position.
I would definitely, if I was building a roster, I would have the minimum amount of players and then adjust myself going forward and sign people after. Yeah. Unless you're like a Dallas type or like a, you know, if you're some org with a huge amount of money and you don't give a shit, it's like, okay, I feel like it's very financially irresponsible from a team perspective. And also since you literally don't know what the game is going to be like, right? To build a big built-out roster,
think about like
ahead of time.
Toronto just found Aspire in the middle of the season. Like you could find these like young cracked players who are now like energized to play Overwatch, right? And like these kids come in and they're just like nuts. And you may have had zero zero knowledge of them before. They may not have even been wanting to try and be a professional.
Like, if anything, I would get like the minimum amount of players, and I would, here's my plea to every Overwatch League team, which makes so much more financial decision, like it's a financial sense for everyone involved, and also improves the scene as a whole and improves your roster flexibility. Just bring back Academy. Just get Academy players, put them on Academy contracts. The two-way contracts are so much more flexible now. You can always just promote them fully if you want to. Just fucking have an Academy team. Pay them, like, don't pay them some ridiculous fucking salary.
You're gonna say
salary.
Don't pay them.
No, I'm gonna say don't pay them ridiculous salary.
Don't pay them.
I mean, to be fair, not paying them is essentially
financially responsible. Get a team, don't pay them.
That would be very responsible. But it's essentially, you can get an Academy team for not heinous amounts of money, and then have those players ready to use under two-way, and then bring them up in the middle of the season. There's no reason to hamstring yourself early with having a huge roster heading to Overwatch League 2, I'm calling it Overwatch League 2.
Overwatch League 2.
Versus just, you should just have a six-man roster and then have an Academy team.
Are we going to have to call it Overwatch 2 League? Are we not going to be able to call it OWL anymore? It'll be OWL
2L. No, it's Overwatch League 2.
I don't know if still, OWL 2 sounds
it's
still good.
Overwatch. It's not like a Call of Duty is called Call of Duty Vanguard League. Like, I mean, last year they would have been called the Cold War League. Would they have gone out with that?
That would have been sick.
That would have been kind of dope, actually.
Imagine if they had the finals in like Eastern League. Germany or something, you know?
All right, I wanted to end this episode. Again, I said it had to be a very short episode today because we're all busy doing stuff to set up for Hawaii, and Jonathan's actually there in person as well. But I wanted to end with a little bit of fun. Someone had put together, in fact, there was two different versions of this, but we're only going to look at one of them today. Grand Finals Bingo. So a bingo card. I think this one was huge as well. It had a ton of different things in there. I want you to find, you two have to tell me which is the most likely outcome. So what is this? A 5x5 square, and bingo, obviously, you need to get 5 in a row. You can go for the diagonals if you want, but which is the most likely to be accomplished? We've got Uber wears a really cool shirt. That's an obvious one. It's almost a free square in the middle. Where the hell else do we go out from here? Which row, column, diagonal are we going to get first?
There it is. Map 5 round 3, I think, is going to happen.
Yep. Okay. Bottom right. 100%. Absolutely. Pelican gets player of the match. That could definitely happen.
Decay gets Atlanta. A 4K is very possible, and Amon going ball is almost is a guaranteed if he's in.
There's two rows. I don't know whether he will be in, but
there's
he might
two
be.
Rows that look good.
Okay.
Sideshow says, now this is very interesting.
I do say that a lot. I say that a lot.
A pause at the worst possible time.
Sure, I could see that. I could see that.
Uber wears a really cool shirt.
Yep.
Everybody on the desk is wrong with a prediction.
I could sure
that's absolutely.
That. Totally yeah.
Pulse
that
bomb
one.
Suicide.
Pulse bomb suicide, though, I don't know. That's a tougher one.
It's quite
that's
the other one. I mean, if the you're playing one, against a Brig and they bash into you and you kill yourself,
yeah, but
that's...
you still, considering all the Tracer we've seen played this year, we've seen very few Pulse bomb suicides. Yeah.
I would also overall. Say the first column down, Aemon goes ball. Chengdu just does, they fucking put him in at random times. Person on the desk flips prediction is a
that's
lock.
Guaranteed.
It's a guarantee.
Sure.
Sideshow yet again. Washington or the Gladiators wins it all. Essentially, the Gladiators winning it all.
That's hard, though. That's
a hard one. I mean, it's possible. I could see Glads potentially doing it. Justice, fuck off. No way. But Glads, maybe.
Yeah. How do you do? Six tanks at once, I guess, would be
is that
like
with
if
Echo?
Echo out there.
Is
yeah.
that the idea? That both yeah, Echoes have to duplicate. Yeah, that's possible, but
also a tied map. Echo? I mean, that is possible. I mean, we still have Sultan, so
yeah.
very possible.
Yeah.
These don't seem that easy, hybrid. Honestly. There's not the easiest ones.
I'm gonna tell you mine. I think very bottom row. Very bottom
no
row.
No
that's
way.
Why I'm locking it in. Locking
the
it
bottom
in.
Row, Shock or Chengdu win it all.
Yeah.
Locking it in.
Yep. Get it in there.
And also, map 5, round 3, full hold on a map, lower bracket run, Genji Blade gets nuked. I mean, that's like 100%. I could see
Yeah, but what
I
is that?
Totally
so you're saying a lower bracket run and Shock or Chengdu win it all. So one of those
that,
teams
yeah.
runs Chengdu it back from the lower bracket.
All out sure, of just the go, lower bracket.
It's just shock copium.
No, again. But the lower bracket run doesn't mean that that team has to win at all. It just means the team has a lower bracket run. The lower bracket runs open for interpretation. There's tons of teams that can have lower bracket runs.
Okay.
In fact, it doesn't even state that lower bracket run is successful. It could be Fuel going into the lower bracket and then immediately losing. But everyone's like, lower bracket run. You know, like, what does that mean?
I think the top, if I was to give one, I think the top row is maybe the best. Eamon goes ball. He does occasionally get subbed in. I think that's relatively possible. Shanghai Dragons or Atlanta win it all. My money's on Shanghai, so I feel like that's decently good. A good old Charlie Niner. I mean, that one's got to be said constantly.
But the thing is, I mean, but have we actually... Who has said a good old Charlie Niner so far this year?
All the time. I'll say it.
Matt I've said I've it, heard tons Mitch of like C, I've I heard so it. Many like C9s and that's an old fashioned C9 stuff, but I don't remember hearing a good old Charlie Niner.
Oh, it's definitely occurred. That's but one I of might Matt Morello's famous phrases.
Oh yeah.
Bren goes, oh my goodness me, man's sake.
Why is he Jamaican?
He does. He sounds Jamaican when he says that.
Sounds Jamaican. Yeah, he sounds Jamaican sometimes.
All right. Well, there you go. There's nothing referencing Matt here though.
Well, no.
Yeah. Matt, what,
I mean,
which
there is maybe
Torb
Hammerkill.
Yeah. What would be the thing for me? I would just be the square in the middle, and it would be Matt is smaller than Mitch, and I would be the free square.
I need you on a ladder for the finals, then. We need to fix this.
but that doesn't even make that. That would just be someone stating the fact and putting it in a square.
Well,
like,
that's
just
why
like Matt
cool
is shorter than Mitch.
Because,
and like, that's just
that's
like
a fact. He's going to wear a cool shirt. I mean,
yeah. I mean, but the thing is, there's the possibility he couldn't. Like, the shirt is not grafted into
his
skin.
Also, I want to say this before it's a bunch of bullshit, okay? Talent takedown, we had bets. I was supposed to be bigger than Mitch on the broadcast, or I had to wear a shirt that he provided. They asked him who had more kills on each other. So he said, oh, yeah, I definitely had more kills on Matt than he had on me, which I was like, that's definitely not true.
There was no fact-checking involved at all.
So now I have these ridiculous shirts I have to wear, like leopard button-down T-shirts. Like,
ooh.
They're not
that's
for
exciting.
Me. But I that's apologize. Really good.
You've also just reminded me that I need to eat some very, very, very spicy ramen at some point during the playoffs, too. That which... I'm not looking forward to it in the slightest and had completely forgotten about. But yeah, that's because I lost the battle to Bren. Speaking of Bren, time for our most important segment of the week. It's
who
Bren's
is it?
Player of the week. Now, Bren showed me somebody earlier, and I'm just trying to Google them because I can't find them again and I've forgotten the
is
name.
Is it Kurt?
But no, it's not Kurt. I'll tell you roughly the story though. Bren sat me down earlier today while we were doing a rehearsal for the playoffs, and he said, do you know why plants are green? Do you know?
Chlorophyll.
Photosynthesis.
And I said that. I said chlorophyll. And he said, but specifically, why does chlorophyll reflect the color green? And I said, oh, well, I used to know because it's part
osmosis.
Of your biology class.
I mean, isn't it because
of
like they
school.
Absorb most wavelengths of light other than the green wavelength?
Yeah, but he's asking kind of like, why have plants evolved to not absorb green, right?
The woolly mammoth. Yeah.
He was telling me, he was essentially explaining it, but he's kind of bad at explaining things. So he was trying to tell me that there's like various different wavelengths of light that they want to absorb and the parts that they don't end up reflecting back as green. But he never really explained to me why. But anyway, the person he wanted as Bren's player of the week today was some scientist who'd done the research into this shit. And I can't find him. I don't know who they were. I mean,
he wanted the person that figured out chlorophyll.
Yes, he wanted the person that did the first research into chlorophyll.
I think this is a great discovery. I'm sure it's important in some aspect of whatever. Like, how bored do you got to be to go look for the light waves that hit the plants? I mean, come on, just let the plants be green. There's a bunch of other shit on. Monday Night Football's on.
I just felt my brain turn to soup with that whole thing. Oh my god, I can't. This is so stupid. Football. What about football?
Brett Favre is on talking about Peyton and Eli Manning. Come
okay,
on, man.
Okay. Who won between the Packers and the Lions today?
So it's still going on. This is an important game because there's a random guy out there that nobody knows. But he had a 16-game parlay, which means he needs to hit all 16 games to get the money. $25 he put down, 16 games. He is 15 for 15. If the Lions win tonight, he turns his $25 into $730,000.
Holy.
They are currently down 21-17. He just has to be sitting there clenching. I mean, I don't know what I would be doing.
That would actually be legendary if that guy gets it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that we're endorsing it or promoting it. You know?
That would just be a legendary.
It'd be great if he won. I'm sure he'll donate it to charity.
Yes. I agree.
All right. Brent, I've found who the scientists were, though.
Is it Isaac Newton?
The green pigment, chlorophyll, was first discovered by Cavento, Joseph Bienom. I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce it. It's French, and it has like bien and M. Bienem, maybe. Joseph Bienem Cavento. I don't know. And Pierre-Joseph Pelletier. I'm probably butchering those pronunciations, but 1906... magnesium was discovered in chlorophyll, but the green pigment was first isolated and named by Joseph Cavento and Pierre.
Guys, we get it. Brent is really smart, and he looks up this stuff all the time because of how smart he is.
Yep. So
Kurt agrees with me.
Kurt's like, football. Yeah. What about football? He's like,
let's get the meat sports on.
Yeah, let's watch the football game.
I watched a football game with Kurt actually. Yeah. The other when I was there.
Kurt. When is Kurt gonna be on Blood Chat?
We could have Kurt on right now.
No, that's for episode 200.
Okay, whenever I see the Valorant chat, I would just see Kurt go to the fridge, and he's just basically going about his normal activities, but people in the chat are like, Kurt, Brent's
just come down. I Googled who first discovered chlorophyll, and it wasn't the guy that you...
No, he didn't discover chlorophyll.
Well, who were you saying as your player of the week?
That guy.
Wait, who's the guy?
Ben Franklin.
No, it's not Ben Franklin.
He was a quantum physicist, and now he works with like quantum biology. Just like applying like mathematical equations to the natural world to figure out how biological functions work.
Thomas Jefferson?
Nathaniel Geber, I think.
This is not the guy.
He's a professor at UC Riverside, Nathaniel Geber, and he...
I hope everybody watching is observing and absorbing all of this information.
Yo, that's my man, Isaac Newton.
Yeah, he it's pretty cool. He like was explaining some of the work he was doing and figuring out like the mechanisms behind why plants are green. Anyway, we gotta rehearse.
I mean,
yeah, we've gotta go.
The amount of disrespect. This guy's done so much work, and we fucked his name up twice, and then we just showed Rubik's cubes to explain what he does.
That'll do it. Let's go TikTok. Let's go see kids steal soap dispensers from bathrooms.
Social media has ruined this generation.
It really has.
God, it's absolutely brutalized. All right, well, that does it for episode 105. I hope you're sufficiently hyped for the playoffs. We are very excited to bring it to you, which is why we have to go for a rehearsal right now. So
Vass loves that picture of me.
I do love that picture.
It is a great one. All right, so we will see you. Well, first of all, we'll see you for the playoffs and then the grand finals and the Overwatch 2 stuff. And we'll be back with a banger of an episode next week.
Big fucking episode next week.
Big old girthy episode. For a
24-hour episode incoming.
24-hour episode.